Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. And as I've been saying, the next mantra here is save America, kill inflation. We just heard from Senator Phil Graham about the spending aspect and the need for welfare reform. Workfare is so important. Welfare is not the reforms of the Bill Clinton era have gone by the by. Now we bring in John Cochran, who is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and the author of the blog called The Grumpy Economist. And, folks, it is a fabulous blog. It's a must-read. And John used to teach at the University of Chicago. So, first of all, John Cochran, how are you? Thank you for coming on.
I'm doing great, but you didn't tell me I had to follow Phil Graham. What a class act.
You know, he is a longtime mentor of mine. But, look, you've been writing about the combined inflationary impact of A, federal spending, and B, Federal Reserve money supply creation. So we tackled the first part. Tell us your thoughts now on Fed policy, because I'm concerned, John. I don't want to be a total strict 100% monetarist, but inflation is, you know, everywhere and always a monetary phenomenon. And I don't see the Fed, you know, they're not shrinking the monetary base balance sheet. The money supply, M2, is still growing at double digits. And the Fed funds target is zero. So, like, what are they doing?
Well, I think this time Phil is mostly right. This inflation really wasn't about money versus bonds. It was about the big whether you borrow money and send people checks or whether you print money and send people checks is going to have about the same effect. Of course, the surprising thing is no one in Washington wants to admit that. But, you know, send people about $5 trillion of checks. They spend it. No surprise inflation. The amazing thing is that completely surprised the Fed. They had no idea that was going to come. So their job is mostly about interest rates these days. Now, they're very slow to react to what's going on with interest rates. I think they've been hoping it'll all go away and they don't have to do their unpleasant job of trying to counteract this enormous fiscal stimulus, along with the welfare programs Phil mentioned are important, too. If you pay people not to work, they don't work. And that also leads to some of the inflation we got going on. So bottom line, they're slowly waking up to raising interest rates, which is the one thing they can do to try to counteract this. But it does seem awfully slow and an awfully rosy scenario that most of the inflation will go away on its own before they really have to get serious about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Janet Yellen says inflation will be at 2% by the end of the year. I have my doubts, big doubts. I was talking to Kevin Hassett yesterday. He thinks the Fed should raise the Fed funds target rate, John, by 50 basis points in each of the next several meetings until you see some evidence either from the indexes, which tend to move slowly, or let's say broad-based commodity indexes, which have actually picking up steam, see them coming down. In other words, you keep raising 50 until you see some evidence that inflation is being pulled down. And actually, Jim Bullard, the president of the St. Louis Fed, kind of hinted at 50 in March with his statements this past week. What are you thinking?
Well, it depends on what happens, as always. I think that the 2% bit, they are counting on most of the inflation just going away on its own, so that the amount that they, the Fed, have to fight is much, much smaller. The general rule of thumb in economics is for every 1 percentage point of inflation, eventually the Fed has to raise the interest rates more than 1% in order to fight that inflation. So if you're talking about 50, 100 basis points, you know, if we have 7% inflation at the end of next year, the way we have it this year, you need interest rates that go up more than 7 if they're going to fight that. So basically, when they're talking about a couple percentage of interest rates, they think most of the 7 is going to just melt away on its own like the snow. and they won't have to do that much fighting of it.
John Cochran,
get that lucky.
Can you hang on? I'm running out of time. Can you stay sit for 5 minutes during an ad and come back on the other side?
I'm here for you.
Oh, you're great. I would really appreciate that. We're talking to John Cochran of the Grumpy Economist and Hoover Institution. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to take a quick break, and then Professor Cochran's going to come on and help us out some more. Thanks ever so much. I'm Kudlow. Save America. Kill inflation.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. Save America. Kill inflation. I'm Larry Kudlow. On the line, we have Dr. John Cochran, who is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He's the author of the blog, The Grumpy Economist. A terrific blog, folks. You got to stay with it. We all read it. And, John, thank you for staying over. We ran out of time because I went long with Phil Graham, so we're going longer with you, and you're very kind on a Saturday morning. John, you were doing some rules of thumb on the Fed funds rate, the target rate, which is presently about zero. And it can't be zero if the inflation rate is 7.5%. Could you just kind of walk us through those rules of thumb?
Absolutely. I mean, the key is if you want to, when you borrow, you pay an interest rate, but then if you have to pay it back with dollars that are worth less, it's like they're paying you, even though it looks like you're paying them, right? So if you want to cut down on inflation, eventually you got to raise the interest rate by more than the inflation rate to slow things down. But I'd say the most important thing here, really, monetary policy isn't just about what you do today. It's like military policy. It's about deterrence. If people expect inflation, we're going to have inflation. So the most important thing the Fed could be doing, and really isn't, is to make it clear that if inflation gets up and stays up, they're going to slam it. Mm. They would be willing to do 1980 again if they had to do it. Mm. You know, this is just like deterring Putin out of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, well, there might be a severely worded memorandum at the United States and Nations, he's not going to do anything. He can do what he wants.
Mm.
You have to show your missiles and be ready to use them. Not in the Ukraine case, but that's the analogy. And the Fed is not really willing to say we would be out there and if inflation gets to 10%, we'll do like 1980 again. It'll be really painful. But only the belief that they're willing to do that keeps people from expecting inflation to really get embedded. And that's the biggest thing that they need to do.
You know, I've talked about a Volcker moment, John, on the TV show, and there's no Volcker. I've actually talked about a Reagan Volcker moment because Reagan said, you know, go on ahead and do what you have to do. And he did. And you're quite right. If the inflation...
You're exactly right. It takes both sides. I don't think Congress would let the Federal Reserve sharply raise interest rates, cause a recession, and keep it there for a couple of years, no matter how bad inflation got.
Yeah.
So it needs both sides.
I suspect you're right. Look, your point, you wrote about the Fed noms, the Fed nominees. I've quoted you on the air. It isn't that they're not qualified in some professional sense. They have degrees and they write papers. But you have to ask, you know, are they more interested in woke climate change than inflation? Are they more interested in what was it, the paper you cited from the Michigan State, Lisa Cook, a credit analysis of small businesses in Russia? And, you know, she wants slavery reparations, and she thinks NASCAR people are stupid. And, you know, it just – and she wants unemployment – I'm sorry, she wants the black unemployment rate to be substituted as a metric for the overall unemployment rate. This was written up by Larry Lindsay.
I think we'd all like to see a low black unemployment rate.
Yes.
In fact, just before the pandemic hit, we had the lowest black unemployment rate ever.
Yes.
Which is something to celebrate.
Yes.
Now, whether you can push that with Fed policy is another question. But this is the big issue here is not these personalities, but where is the Fed going? Is the Fed... the regional Feds are spending more time on inequality and racial issues. I'm not sure that there's much the Fed can do about that other than nag the banks. to have DEI programs. But the big issue is the climate change. Mm. And Sarah Bloom Raskin, who's an extremely qualified person, and that's why I worry about her. She knows exactly how to use financial regulation in order to tell the banks to stop lending to oil companies, try to starve oil companies out of the financial system. She said that's what she wants to do. That's what the whole climate, the whole project to bring climate into financial regulation is about. And that I think is a dangerous overstepping of what the Federal Reserve ought to be doing. Do climate policy that our legislators are not willing to say on record and to vote laws that they're willing to do, but sneak it in through the Fed, and not just good climate policy, the climate policy of starving the fossil fuel companies, drive up the price of gas. That having the Federal Reserve do that is just a terrible idea.
Well, let's see.
So I think that we should be talking about that issue, and not just the people that embody it.
Well, no, but I have. I mean, it's both. But
yes.
I have. And I've never said she wasn't qualified. I've never said Scott Cook wasn't qualified. I just find her views abhorrent. Now, on the climate change, John Cochran, you know, let's suppose – first of all, I don't think the Fed has a thing to do with climate change. You wrote a pretty good critique of that because climate change is, you know, are 50 to 100 years. There's no immediate existential risk. But, you know, let's suppose they cut back. They forced the banks to cut back, and the banks really forced the big oil and gas companies to cut back. You know, John, that what's that going to do? Cut supply, raise demand. That's going to jack up prices of energy, which will go right into the CPI. In other words, as a Fed governor, she's saying, I'm for more inflation, not less.
Yeah, kind of hilarious that there was a proposal in Congress to get rid of gas taxes.
Yes.
As if they hadn't been spending the last 2 years trying everything they can to reduce supply of gas. Look, climate change is important. And where are all the emissions coming from? Coal plants in China. Climate change is important. It's a long-term issue, and it has nothing to do with financial regulation. The idea that there is some climate risk facing the financial system that's going to cause explosions in the financial system over the next couple of years, that is just made up as an excuse to let the regulators go in and kill the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah. It was a great piece you wrote. If the inflation rate is hovering, John, the PCE deflator, personal consumption deflator, which I guess is the Fed's basic metric, the last 12 months, that's nearly 6%. Let's just use that for a minute. If the inflation rate hovers around 6%, John Cochran, what would your rules of thumb suggest about the Fed funds rate?
Well, if it stays 6%, then the Fed funds rate has to be at least more than 6%, so that it actually costs you something to borrow money. And, you know, we haven't seen interest rates above 6% for a long time. Now, the Fed's hope is that most of that 6% will go away on its own, so they only have to fight a 2, 3, 4% inflation. And I don't know, hope is a dangerous strategy.
I know. It's like second and third marriage is a triumph of hope over experience. John, let's assume, all right, I'll come down even more. Let's assume the basic inflation rate, I don't even know what that phrase means, but let's assume it isn't 6 or 7 or 10, where, by the way, I think there's a risk it could go to 7 to 10. But let's assume it's 5, just for argument's sake. Is there anybody in the Federal Reserve System that envisions a 6 or 7% Fed funds rate to deal with 5% inflation?
Oh, I think they understand these principles quite well. They just have been very bad for the last couple of years at seeing inflation coming. So they keep saying, as they did in the 1970s, you're old enough to remember it. Oh, it's just a supply shock. Oh, it's just a market causing a problem. Oh, it's just this, that, and the other thing. So they're assuming these are one-time shocks that are going to go away. So they only have to fight a 1 or 2% inflation or maybe 3%. But I think they all understand that if inflation stays at 5% and is going to be 5%, they're going to have to raise interest rates to a good deal more than that. Risk a recession, it's going to be a political mess. But the Fed certainly understands this is where they would have to go. They just don't believe they're facing that danger right now.
John Cochran, one more, the last minute or so. Your wonderful piece, Infrastructure Does Not Mean Roads and Bridges, apparently. I just love this piece. I've quoted this piece on the TV show a million times. Tell us about it. Infrastructure does not mean roads and bridges. I thought it did. I was surprised.
I thought so.
Shocked.
Too. You know, we were sold this trillion-dollar infrastructure bill that was going to make things wonderful. Of that, already, only about $100 billion was going to be devoted towards what you and I think of as roads and bridges. And it turns out, once it gets through the administration, that they said, no, we won't use any of this money to subsidize any project that would increase travel lanes that might be used by cars. So you literally cannot build any new roads or bridges. Worse than that, you can't use the money in any way that would change travel patterns. So you can resurface an existing road, but you can't change travel patterns. And I was thinking, you know, suppose our ancestors had said, well, you can build a transcontinental railroad. That's fine. But you can't change travel patterns. So only the same number of people can go as go on horse wagon. Are you kidding me? So that's our modern infrastructure.
Well, that's because what the regulators are doing to subvert the bill, the federal highway regulators, nationally. You know, Trump administration had, we changed permitting through this NEPA, but they're throwing that out for highway administrators and Endangered Species Act. They're getting around it, at least as far as roads and bridges are concerned.
No, this is a great point. You know, people think we don't have money. We have tons of money in the U.S. The problem with roads and bridges is not the money. The problem with roads and bridges is getting the permits, getting it through environmental review, the massive bloat in how much it costs stuff, you know, billions of dollars per mile to build a subway. I mean, the French build subways at way less than what it costs us to build subways. That's the problem. Yeah, you guys did a great job. The environmental reviews are not saving the environment. They're there for people who don't want projects to be able to block them and make them more expensive and drag them out.
That's right.
This was supposed to have a limit on environmental reviews, and the administration said, no, we're going to just ignore that and put all the environmental reviews back in if you want to change the right-of-way at all or build new lanes or build new roads. So back to block, extend, let things go on for years and years.
John, you're wonderful. Folks, you got to read. The blog is called The Grumpy Economist. Dr. John Cochran is the author. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute. John, thanks very much for giving us your time today.